this is Jerry Pippin. Welcome to our special on the psychic detectives. Can murder victims come back from the dead, from the other side, and tell who killed them? Exactly how do psychics work with the police in finding missing bodies and solving murder crimes? Today, we have an incredibly interesting show as we talk to three psychics in different parts of the country about how they work to help police and the families of victims of violent crimes. We'll be going down to Houston, Texas, and talking with Vicki Warren. We'll go to Hot Springs, Arkansas, and visit with Jen Sutterfield. But our first guest is from Ohio, and we made this tape back in February, and it was quite cold in Ohio. Now it's almost summer. We were talking on the phone in February to noted psychic Gail St. John about her amazing track record in solving murder crimes. So let's pick up our show. Gail St. John, it's cold in Toledo.
Very cold right now, about 15 degrees.
The reason I ask you that, I've seen you on television, and you have a big reputation working with police departments around the country as a psychic detective. And I've always wondered, and this may be an off-the-wall question, but does the weather affect psychic ability?
It doesn't affect the ability. Well, of course, unless I'm standing outside. Yeah. I can't think because my feet are froze.
So I imagine from that standpoint it would. If you're standing in a cemetery or a crime scene and you're freezing, you might have trouble bringing something in.
Well, my mind still functions. The body just doesn't. It does hamper an investigation if I'm actually out there in the field, because I'm one of those hands-on people. I will actually get out there, and if I'm shown a place to go, I will physically go there and find the body if there's a missing person.
And you've done that before?
Many times.
And how does that work? Do you have a hunch, or do you have a visualization, or... is it a combination of things?
Well, it's a combination of things, and biggest thing is no two cases are ever alike, so you can't ever say, well, it's always this certain way. Some cases it's a vision. I feel like I'm watching a giant television.
Oh, really? So it's in panorama vision or cinemascope. It's a wide vision.
Or sometimes you actually are right there. I mean, your whole room disappears and you're at the scene.
So it's more like a 3D movie.
Right. You never quite know how it's going to happen. It really depends on the strength.
Do you just see the vision or do you feel things? In other words, in a picture... you're watching a movie, you hear the sound, and you watch the scene, but do you feel the wind blowing? And the...
everything. You get smell. You pick up smells.
Uh-huh.
I've been somewhere where I stood there and didn't recognize, of course, where I was, because it might have been in another country. It might have been, you know, here in the States, but I didn't recognize the area. And I stood there sniffing. I smell pine trees. I smell tar. I smell, you know... and you can pick up smells from the area.
Hmm. I want to get into more detail about this in a minute, Gail, but you come from a family of psychics. That had to be a little, it was average for you because that was your environment, I guess, but it would be unusual for most people. Couldn't get away with anything as a kid, could you?
No, it's pretty hard. You really can't because, you know, pretty much everybody knows what everybody's doing. And, It's pretty much, from even knowing what the other person's thinking. It's more than just knowing a person when you live in a family like that. So.
Well, I imagine you're kind of inside their head.
Yeah, there's no really any point to trying to lie and get away with it.
Well, that's no fun. Is your husband psychic?
No, he's not.
Oh, well, good. Okay. Then you can sneak off and have a dessert at lunch or whatever.
Yeah, but he knows me pretty well after 20-some years of marriage.
Why, sure. Sure, I understand that. When did you first get into using your ability for the good, for law enforcement?
Let's see. I was probably roughly about 15 years old when I started. I think I was around 7 when I made the conscious decision to say that I am going to, when I grow up, you know what most kids say, they want to grow up be a fireman, they want to grow up be a, you know, policeman. I said I want to grow up and I want to find missing people and work on murders.
And you knew that from early on. That's kind of like I knew about broadcasting.
Right.
I used to get everybody in the whole neighborhood to have to take part in my radio and TV shows. And as a consequence, not many people came to visit me. No, I'm just teasing, but I know what you're saying. You know, a lot of people don't understand what they want to do, and I think it's kind of, you knew, and I knew, it's kind of refreshing, really, you have a goal and you work for it.
Right. It's just, I started doing things and realizing really more about my ability, I want to say probably 3-4 years old. Because I can remember an incident very well that kind of started me off. I want to say that was a jump start.
Mm-hmm.
I was playing with friends in my front yard and turned around and I looked at my friend's house and it was on fire.
Wow.
I turned around again and look, I kind of shook my head and looked again and it wasn't. I was so confused. I mean, I'm about a 4-year-old kid. I'm thinking, oh boy, whoa, wild imagination here. Well, several days later, their house caught fire. Of course, they were safe, thank God. But, you know, I realized at that point, I saw that. I mm-hmm. knew that. I knew that was going to happen. I could have not prevented it, maybe, but warned them. And then I realized, and still today, that is one of my very strong points in disability. Everybody has their strong points. And my strong point is stepping into the future.
So you actually can tell what's happening. Or not always, probably, but do you wait till the flash comes? Or can you call upon your ability to foresee the future?
I can call upon my ability now that I've gotten older and mastered it. And I use it on my cases to look into.
And how do you do that? How does that?
Killer's going to kill again. Can I prevent another murder? Can I prevent something from happening? Is there some way, or where will the killer end up? Can I find out where the killer may end up, or anything in that way that can help?
Can you tell if the case is going to be won or lost in court?
Quite frequently I can tell those things. I can even say, when a case is brought to me, I can tell you if it's ever going to be solved or not solved.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll tell you if there's going to be...
Have you ever been wrong about, this case will never get solved, and then something happens?
Not that I know of yet.
Okay. I'm just curious. Tell me a little bit how the psychic detectives thing got started.
Well, it was pretty much a dream of mine. From at least about 5 years now. I wanted to put a team together that worked well together, that could drop the normal, I want to say, human issues of ego, because we don't have room for that. And
well, in television, it's hard to find somebody without an ego.
Right. Ego is great in some places, but not in this type of work. In this type of work, we have to work well together. We have to have no egos. And it was difficult. I interviewed different people. It just didn't work. I mean, they'd start right out with the kind of the know-it-all type of attitude, and you know, I was like, no, this isn't going to work. We've all got to work together to, you know.
How about the other two people?
I'm with Jim Sutterfield and Vicki Warren, and right now we have been together for several months, and
it's working out okay.
It's great. I mean, we have found. I think we've all shocked ourselves. We've emailed back and forth to each other and said we've shocked ourselves. We work so well together that the rate that we're handling cases is 3-4 times faster than when each of us was working alone.
Jim Sutterfield's down in near Hot Springs or someplace in Arkansas. Where's Vicki?
Vicki's he's in the Houston, Texas area.
And you're the only one in the upper Midwest.
Yep, I'm here freezing. Yeah.
Well, the reason I bring that up is 600-700 miles difference between you and both of them.
Right.
Does distance make any difference at all? I know in our business now, with the way computers are, my executive producer's in Secaucus, New Jersey, right outside New York, I live in most of the time, and well, my residence is in Oklahoma, but I do a lot of taping in Las Vegas as well. And one of my tape editors is in Boulder, Colorado. Another person's in Carson City, Nevada. So it really doesn't make much difference, I don't guess, where they are.
No, we go back and forth via email, telephone. We reside sort of, I want to say we reside on...
Well, you guys are psychic. You don't need a phone.
Well, occasionally we do. We reside on Yahoo groups. So, you know, that's our place where we store our cases. We communicate back and forth with each other. Each one of us hands in what we call a sheet on when a case comes in. None of us reads the information. We like to do them cold, so to speak.
So literally... probably most of these fairly current cases, but it's caught so the cold case analogy doesn't really work other than you don't do a lot of homework on it.
We don't do any, if possible. We don't want to know anything but a name.
And
if we know a name, then each one of us goes to work, hands in our sheet into our Yahoo group, and then everyone reads each other's going, oh, let's see if what we agree on here, what did we talk about?
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, and then we're all like, oh, I can't believe it. We all wrote almost exactly the same stuff. So, I mean, we were kind of like kids learning about each other, going, oh, look at this. Oh, look what you saw, you know. So as we've developed as a group, it's just been sort of like, really, in a sense, three kids getting together and learning.
Yeah, now Gail, I want to get into some examples of your cases. I mean, we'd be remiss without discussing some of that, if you can. I mean, are you working on something that's pretty particular, you know, particularly difficult right now, or?
We have quite a few cases right now. A couple of the cases, I'm going to say, are, you know, a little more higher profile.
Sure.
Matter of fact, there's a missing girl since about January 31st of 1996. Her name is, she's on the Missing and Exploited Children's List, Rachel Marie Mellon. We are working on that case.
And did she just went off to school and never came home, or what?
Well,
Or do you know? The reason I ask you said you didn't want to know much more than the name when you first started.
After we handed in our information, then we're allowed to look.
Uh-huh.
We get to look afterwards.
Okay.
But basically, with her case, as her website states, she had stayed home from school, pretty much disappeared while staying home from school, and has not been seen since 1996.
And she's still missing today?
Still missing today.
And none of you have any hard and fast information?
We have some information that we haven't...
Yeah, I understand this is a ticklish thing.
We do have some information, and we feel good about that case. Another case we're working on is it was also on the Missing and Exploited Children's List, is Sean Hornbeck case. He's been missing since 2002, still missing.
What generally happens... to these missing children, they usually are just murdered and dropped off someplace, or is that too bleak of a?
Well, parents are involved in some cases. You know what I mean? And they, you know, take their children. There's parental abductions, but.
In other words, the divorces, etc.
Right, and in a lot of cases, unfortunately, the children are murdered.
What do you think that? You know, the percentage, I've always figured that if they're missing for a year or two, it's probably 60-70% chance they're dead.
Right. It is, and it's unfortunate. And then your issue becomes, now, where are the remains? If we, we, for first thing we determine is when we go to work a case is, are they dead? Are they alive? Now, apparently, if I contact them directly, they're dead.
Okay.
Come to me directly, they can't do that if they're alive.
But so you delve for lack of a better term on the other side.
Right.
Can you talk to anybody that's passed away?
Pretty much.
How does that work?
Just basically like you and I are talking.
You hear a voice?
I will hear them.
In your.
I will and most frequently see them in front of me.
Oh really?
Mm-hmm.
And I would think this ability. Would be questioned by authorities, but be a great use to them, because every victim usually knows why they died.
Right. And.
And I would think, from your standpoint, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that ought to be painful, talking to somebody about how they met their demise.
It is. Some of them are not able to talk to me as much as show me, which is sometimes, I think, even worse, but sometimes they have a hard time dealing with what happened. And I'm shown things, and feeling the last moments of someone's life. Physically, you feel it, and emotionally, you feel it.
Do you feel, I mean, a lot of these things are violent deaths. Do you feel pain?
Yes. Yes, frequently. And you have to, you know, when you get to that point, you have to shut it down. You know, I've learned to say, okay, enough. I get what happened.
How do you call these spirits, for lack of a better term, up? Do you sit at a desk and concentrate, or?
You know, sometimes I will sit and actually concentrate, what I call a meditation session, where I'll sit and just blank my mind, free myself of everything, and just relax. And then sometimes I'm driving down the street, and they'll talk to me whether I like it or not. I've had to pull off the road.
In other words, once they figure Gail St. John's on the case, they're going to take it.
Yeah, there's... I was called on a case, as a matter of fact, in Pennsylvania, and... I was getting ready to go out to dinner. I did agree to take the case. I said email the information. I had names. I said just email the information. I'm on my way out the door. Well, I get on the road, and next thing you know, the road's gone. It's hard to drive when you can't see the road. It just kind of disappeared.
Wow.
And this whole scene started folding, and I just kind of whipped the car over and put it in park and went, oh, hey, guys. Wow, you know, that's a little wild there. Can we not do that when I'm driving?
Mm-hmm.
You know, of course, they don't know a sense of time. You know what I mean? Like we have. I mean, hey, it sounded like a good time, I guess, to them, so they did it.
Where are these dead people, do you think? Are they in another dimension, or?
Do we want to call it heaven, or whatever people want to call it? The way I have viewed things and seen things, and of course I'm naturally, you know, human, I ask questions. From the questions that I've asked on the other side, the way it's referred to me as it's like planes. You know, like different, almost, the feeling is almost like a school, like planes, you're on different levels.
You're different, in other words, some are in the 6th grade, some in the 12th grade.
Right, and you keep working over there, or just sort of like you keep working here to learn more.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And what are your? I know you've been involved with, for lack of a better term, spiritualism.
Right. I pretty much grew up that way.
What is your philosophy about life and death?
Well, you know.
I mean, I don't want to get real deep here, but.
Yeah, but I say they're as much living as we are. They just don't have a physical body. They're as much alive as we are. Apparently they are, because I can talk to them.
Well, I've always thought about this, and if I were murdered, and I went to the other side, and there was life, by God, I'd go get the guy.
That's right. And that's how a lot of these feel that contact us. A lot of them feel like they're, they are doing their best. They want this person put away.
Sure.
Just for what they did, but to prevent others from...
Sure. And that's an important part of your job and your psyche, why you got involved in this. And for the most part, most policemen, I think, have that in mind.
Right.
Or they wouldn't be policemen.
Right.
But you know, I have had violent deaths in my family, murders.
Mm-hmm.
If I were the person murdered, I'd make sure that SOB was haunted every day. If I had any kind of power.
And some, I'm going to assume, are.
Yeah, okay.
Because I have some, I've had people come through there very strong from the other side. I want to say, so probably in life here, when their physical body, they probably were very strong spiritual people that already had, say, sort of, so to speak, that open, that, you know, spiritual awareness. They weren't shocked when they passed on, you know, that there was an other side.
Yeah, right. And they were taught certain things, and they accepted certain things in their belief system, and they die, it may or may not be true.
Right. And so I want to say, so probably people that maybe don't have as strong a belief system, it may be a little more shocking when they get there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Okay, now they're a little behind than some of the others who were already, you know, had that mindset. And I've had problems with people contacting me. In one case I worked just recently with the Jesse Jones case.
Tell me about that.
Oh, I joke about him because he was my one-word clue, the king of one-word clues, which was difficult. He, when he passed, he was sort of a proclaimed atheist.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think ended up being a bit of a shock to him, of course, you know, once he was gone. And when I first made contact with him, he was sort of in a corner. And I tried and tried, and he just wouldn't respond. I had several meditations with the family. Eventually, I got him to talk, but he became my king of one-word clues. When I'd work the case, he'd give me one, maybe two words to go on. Now, I like games, but that's really hard.
Yeah. Why would he do that, you think?
It's all he could get out to me.
I mean, it was beyond him. He wasn't necessarily playing a game. That's all he could just do.
Right. He couldn't figure out how to contact me exactly, or how to get out a sentence, or how to get, you know what I mean? So it was a word or two. And I think the biggest thing he gave me was, one time he said, pressed and sealed. But to the average person, just like myself, that I just stood there going, thanks, Jesse.
Yeah.
I don't get it.
Right.
I just don't get it. What's wrong with me? I don't get it. Can show me more? Well, he didn't have the ability to show me more. Pressed and sealed. So there I hung. The only thing the other I was impressed with, because a lot of times he couldn't talk, he impressed me with and said that his body would not be found till mid-April. I said, okay. I told the family. Well, I didn't know I was... When I you know, stepped into the future there, I didn't realize it would be me finding the body. I don't always know those things. I don't know if it would be me or somebody else, you know.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Especially this guy with one-word clues.
Right. So, well, I did. I found him, I think it was April 17th or 18th. I found his body. But I was in a store shopping. This is one of those good ones. You're in the store shopping, and I had found, there's a lot of things I'd found previous from his clues, but I went and dug up evidence from a motel key to a kicked-in motel room door. But none of it was adding up to me. None of it was helping me find where he was. The pressed and sealed lingered in my mind, and I went to the store the one day, and I was a little angry. I have a tendency to do that. I was a little angry. Saying, you know, come on, these one word clues aren't working. I was in the parking lot, and I just kind of yelled, Jesse, talk to me. And, of course, my daughter's always going, Mom, Mom, you said that out loud. Don't do that.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, oops, sorry. You people look at you like you're a little nuts. You know, but she's like, I was feeling very, very deep frustration from this case. And all of a sudden, he just yelled right back at me a street name. And I knew it was a street name because he impressed me with that feeling after he said the name. Okay, king of one-word clues. All right. So I got on the computer, and it said there was no such street. Oh, I was like, oh, Jesse, I'm not getting this. There's no such street. So I get on the phone with my oldest daughter, who's a nurse, and she says, well, Mom, I have one of these big, you know, maps, and it tells everything. Let me look it up. So I'm on the phone with her. She goes, oh, Mom, I found it. I'm like, okay, I'm in the car. I'm with my 17-year-old daughter. I'm in the car. Direct me. I'm driving right now. Get me there. He wants me there. Get me there. She's giving me all these instructions. I find this little street about four houses long. In between the four houses is a vacant lot. When you look through this vacant lot, it leads you to the next road over, which was a state highway. I'm looking over there, and I'm still going, all right, Jesse, I don't get it. I'm looking, but I'm looking through this vacant lot like it makes a picture. You know what I mean? It sends you to the other side of the, you know, where the next road is.
Mm-hmm.
So they're just confused. And then all of a sudden I looked to my left, and I looked at the building, and it said, seamless siding and gutters and airtight windows. And then I heard Jesse say the words again, pressed and sealed. I went, pressed and sealed. The process is pressed and sealed. Oh, I said, Jesse, why didn't you just show me windows or something? He was telling me the process.
Mm-hmm.
Sealed, airtight windows, and seamless gutters and siding. When they come out, they do it on the spot. They're pressed and sealed.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't think about this, but apparently it made sense to him. So I jumped in my car and drove as fast as I could to the other street, walked down the line, there's a creek line there, and there his body was in 5 minutes I was there.
You see, the body had to be decomposed at that time, or not?
Yes.
Yeah, and so, I mean, you see some horrible things.
Yeah, you do.
And
I won't say you don't.
Yeah, and I wonder how he felt. Seeing his body decomposed. I guess when you go to the other side, you'd kind of leave that, huh?
Yeah, it's not really a reaction. Like I said, the funny thing is, my daughter went down the creek. It was a very steep embankment. And I stayed up. And as I was walking, like the first couple of minutes, my daughter always says I'm like a hound dog on a trail because if I cross the street, I'd probably get hit by cars because I don't even look. That's how bad I am. I'm on a trail. I can't get off of it. Well, she was down there, all of a sudden I heard my father's voice. My father's passed away, and it was very strong. He said, call her up now. And I was kind of puzzled, and so I went ahead and I called my daughter up immediately, up the embankment. She got up, she says, what's wrong, Mom? I says, I don't know, and I just took about four more steps, and I felt a hand on my shoulder, and I thought, looked, and my daughter was next to me. So, and then I looked, and it was Jesse. And he just said, turn. And looked down, and he said, that's me. And I turned, looked down, and that was him.
Wow.
So it was like, if I hadn't called my daughter up the embankment, she would have fallen over.
And so I'm getting the impression that those that have passed on to the other side hang around and are somewhat like guardian angels.
Right.
You mentioned your father.
Yeah, my father. I talk to him frequently. He helps out. And the funny thing is, Jesse seems to now be hanging around, so to speak, with me. So
he's your bud, too.
Yeah, he's been working on other cases with me.
Well, good. Gail, we could talk for hours about this, and we probably will in the future, but our time's up for this time. I know that... did you go over to Tokyo or not?
We are put off in Tokyo until spring.
Uh-huh. The reason I ask you this is you're well known around the world.
Yes, pretty much.
Okay. We have a link to the website, and we're going to give it for the radio listeners again. And we'll be talking to Jim Sutterfield and also to Vicki as we continue the show on Psychic Detectives. Gail, thanks very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
And we have a link here on this page to Gail St. John's website. I think you'll find it very interesting. In a moment, we're going to another woman who's very interesting as well, Vicki Warren. But first, we're going to take time out for this message. Tales of the Strange and the Unknown. Every month in Fate Magazine. Fate Magazine has actually been published continuously since 1948. That makes it the longest-running publication of its kind. From psychics and spiritualists, archaeological hotspots and fringe science, to authoritative UFO and paranormal investigations, Fate articles are factual, informative, and entertaining. Subscribe to Fate Magazine today. Simply go to FateMag.com, FateMag.com, or check it out at your local newsstand. Fate Magazine is a favorite for people looking for answers and for people looking for entertainment.
Fate.
Tales of the Strange and the Unknown.